I just need to start it.
All right. Yeah, well, I'll do this. I'll call the meeting to order of the current Parks Conservation and Maintenance Subcommittee, January 21st, 2020, Lithia Cabin. First order of business is the approval of minutes for December 10th, 2019, last year. Hey, I would move to approve.
Yep, I agree. Okay.
Second, approve. Move to no public participation. We'll have the APRC / City of Ashland coordination on the CEAP, S-C-E-A-P discussion.
That was going to be Stu Green.
Well, I can give you a bit of a description of the general plan. So at the moment, and everybody else in this room understands the way the city government works a lot better than I do. But anyway, as I understand it, like, unless your goals or your policies are incorporated into the comprehensive plan for the city, then they don't necessarily apply to everything that the city does, because as I understand it, it's kind of like, I don't know, an umbrella or something. And so, like, if it's up at the very top of the umbrella, then everything else has to kind of go through that to get to whatever other end point policies are made. So at the moment, at least, one of the main goals of the Built Environment Subcommittee, which is somehow responsible for getting the CEAP incorporated into city policy, one of our goals is to make sure that that is incorporated into the comprehensive plan, with the idea that it will then apply to everything, including APRC as well as whatever else there is for it to apply to, the Planning Commission. I think as much as anything, I don't know that APRC is really the highest priority for the Climate Policy Committee or anything like that. I think it's more that we are hoping that it applies to the Planning Department, honestly. But anyhow, at the moment, at least, it doesn't necessarily apply. It's an optional set of aspirational guidelines.
Is this going to be its own chapter in the conference plan, or will it be attached to a specific part of the plan? And so you guys are going to propose a policy or some proposal to include in the conference plan.
I think what the deal is now, and maybe Stu can talk about this, but the I believe the ordinance as it is now requires that the city do a lot of things. But if it gets into the comprehensive plan, then it becomes part of the overall plan for the city, which all people applying for application or building permits and development permits and things like that would then have to follow.
Yes.
So that's, I think, because we're all city and parks, we're all following it right now. And when we go to the city council, we say how we're applying the ordinance and all that kind of stuff. But it, as far as I know, it doesn't apply to all private developments as of yet.
Sorry, I missed the question.
This is the CEAP. We're talking about CEAP and how it applies. Well, go ahead.
How are you going to answer that?
We were talking about how the CEAP applies to APRC specifically, and I was just saying that at least the Built Environment Subcommittee and I think the CPC generally are hoping to incorporate the CEAP into the comprehensive plan so that it applies to every department in the city.
Well, yeah, it already applies to every department in the city by virtue of ordinance, but it's not built into the strategic plan of the city, which is the comp plan.
So that's what I was saying, is that as an ordinance, it applies to us, but if it gets into the comp plan, then it could apply to everybody, all built environment, all planning applications, and everything.
Okay.
So it's a valuable place to put your information. In that way, it's institutionalized kind of in the city, and it's just hopefully people actually read it. So the Trails Master Plan, this is the revision for the comprehensive plan of the transportation section and the trails particularly. So that's what's happening tonight,
right,
to get that. So you guys will have a update. Once you get it in the plan, you'll have at some point you'll update it every 10 years, they say. around 10 years, you reevaluate it and make the changes.
So what the most important thing would be that once it's in the comp plan or general plan or whatever, then ordinances will be written to dictate how it applies to properties and things like that. So it'll actually be an on-the-ground implementation of the policy.
And I guess that's where I don't know enough about city government or how it works to know that it applies to all of our departments, that it doesn't necessarily get implemented, or I don't know, that it's like that there's some difference between the fact that it currently applies to everybody, but if we put it into the comprehensive plan, then it applies to everybody, but in a...
Well, so there, in planning, there are certain criteria, and there has to be what's called a, I'm forgetting the term, but it's basically a visible goalposts where you know how to accomplish all the criteria to get a development approved. I know that I have to have this much parking and these many trees, and I have to take care of my stormwater. And I have to provide ingress and egress and pedestrian facilities and all of these different types of things. So in order to make any kind of SEED goals part of the requirements for the built environment, has to go in the comprehensive plan, and then it's supported by being enacted in ordinance through zoning ordinances as part of the criteria to evaluate developments.
Okay.
Where right now, by the city council adopting it, they're saying we'll do all the things that it says, but they didn't necessarily put it into, and correct me if I'm wrong, Stu, but as far as I know, they didn't necessarily put it into development criteria. So developments aren't necessarily being weighed against this criteria right now. It's just everything that we're doing. When we buy vehicles, when we build new facilities, when we design new stuff, things like that we're actually doing. And by going
and
taking that...
The land use ordinance is a document that,
yes,
that when you go propose a planning project, you have to meet the land use ordinance. And let's say we want everybody to wire for photovoltaic, let's say, you have to include that in certain zones, or like what they did with the years ago, it was a solar ordinance that you know, blocking your neighbor with your building, and so that's in the land use ordinance. It's a really complicated formula, and so you really want to, what you guys will be proposing, get it in the comp plan and land use ordinance, and it's really law at that point. There's not a lot of wiggle room. You have to meet the criteria or have a reasoning that you don't have to. So you have to make a case for yourself, like a legal case, really.
And the other thing is that we can put any kind of standards on ourselves that we want, but in order to put a standard on a citizen through zoning, you have to show what's called an essential nexus, and you have to show a relationship between what they're doing and what the requirement is. So it has to be distilled down to say, if you do this, then you have to do that. If you do this, then you have to do that. And all of that has to be proportionally related to the impact that the development is having on the community. So, I mean, sounds like there's a few more steps, but when you say that they want to get it into the comprehensive plan, that's where I see it going, which is great. I mean, that's the way you make change. That's the way you do it.
So. It just takes a while.
So I have a question. I kind of understand the process and what this is about, but I guess my judgment of the Parks Department is that we work to doing the right thing, mm-hmm. no matter whether we're required to do it or not. And at this stage of my existence, I'm pretty interested in action. And so is there somebody, I presume you and others, maybe on the commission and staff, already are aware of what it says in the SEED plan, which has been adopted as policy, and I presume that Parks is working to carry out those goals in some way, even though it's not required of us. Is that
no? It is required of us, and if we're spending
at this
city
point,
money,
it is required.
So,
of us.
For instance,
yes,
one of the most visible things for us that we actually do that impacts us with SEED is when we purchase new vehicles, right? Mm-hmm. And when we purchase new vehicles, we're looking at alternative vehicles to see if we can accomplish the same task with something different than our typical vehicles that we would have purchased before. When we design new facilities like the swimming pool, we are aware that what the city council's goals are, and yes, we are trying to work towards those goals. I've met with Stu and Adam in the past, and we've gone over some of the things that we have done. But it's been a while since we've met. It's been over a year since we've met, and probably we should meet again to make sure that we're still working towards the policies.
And I think at some point we had a discussion last year, and I was not that familiar with the commission or SEEP, and so I looked it up and read over the documents, and then I went back the other day and I said, well, I gotta read the whole thing again and kind of really pick up on what you guys were attempting to do, and it's really hard to find the link to it, actually. I was looking at the commission, but it seems like there should be a direct link from
/climate
on
city website.
So if I go to the climate commission and then want to find
if you just go to the city website /climate, that'll take you to the main. And that's all being restructured within the next 2 or 3 months. That's going to be renewed.
Okay.
So I have not been keeping it up quite as much as I might normally because I know it's going to get replaced soon. So.
Okay. And I think to Joanne's point, it's important for us to find out what you guys are doing, where you're going,
sure.
And so I guess it's up to me to look up the minutes and things like that and kind of follow along on your process, because being in the loop's way more valuable. And we're talking about two-cycle engines, which is an interesting subject. We could have a whole discussion on that, but that's the first I'd heard of it, but it's not shocking. It's just that you guys are discussing that on your end. Now I know I have to make sure I find out what you guys are discussing so I can be ready to think about the issues and ask some intelligent questions on where you guys are going. So it's really just a matter of the city working together, and this you're a fairly new entity, and this is a brave new world, and you guys have some interesting things you want to propose. And
The commission is still working out its own process. Mm-hmm. Also, I think there's some question as to what's the right stage to, say, develop a draft ordinance. In some cases, it might be up front. In other cases, it might be later on. And I already know that there's stuff that some of the subcommittees are cooking up that's going to raise consternation. Not because it's something we shouldn't talk about, but just, as soon as you put the word out about a two-cycle ban or a natural gas ban, then the hackles go up somewhere.
This town is built on controversy.
Sure.
So I've been here for almost 40 years,
and
so I'm not shocked anymore about anything. It's actually exciting to hear people discussing it. We want to hear that discussion and get people used to the idea, because I'm agreeable on a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. So
ideas.
So I'll just say, without going into everything your subcommittees are doing right now, when you do have that information, and if it's something that is potentially going to, I hope with any department, affect what they're doing, like for instance the two-cycle ban would affect us pretty bad, and we're not opposed to working towards the alternative, which is a better alternative, but it has to be a better alternative.
Sure.
We have to actually be able to accomplish it. And so when you get to that point, we're here and available to talk and bounce things off and to give feedback too. But I think you'll find in everything that we do, like Joanne is saying, we're not doing what we're doing. I mean, we're always trying to work towards what the best thing is to do. And as we are given alternatives, or as alternatives are come available, our staff keeps in touch with what the best practices are, what the best invention or innovations are, and things like that. And in some cases, we can transition over to different things, like electric golf carts at the golf course. Just totally got rid of all those gas, kind of got rid of them. Anyways, I think we saved some of them, half of them for tournaments, but we're moving towards something, and And we always want to do that, but there aren't alternatives for everything.
And I researched two cycles after that meeting, and it's pretty amazing how small an engine can pollute that much.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really kind of off the scales, and so you get a better understanding once you go do research. So that's what the value of these meetings is. I get to go home and go do researching on whatever the topics were. So that's why keeping us in the loop is, you know, help you guys out, because we're willing members in this. We just, like I mentioned in the minutes last year, we need to have alternatives, and we need to vet these products, and we need to evaluate the products. So the more lead time, the better. If we look at us go in that direction, then, you know, it ups the ante on that. We have to,
sure.
We got to start finding alternatives. And I'm looking for four-stroke blowers, and, you know, it's not really, because four strokes are usually way cleaner than two-stroke, but then, you know, anyway, it's kind of fun to search the web and get ideas, and then vet your idea on the web is pretty valuable stuff for me, anyway.
One other thing is that, as far as I know, the Climate Policy Committee, the things that we work on are suggestions for the City Council.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So until they actually make it to the City Council and the City Council goes ahead with them, it's all just conjecture.
Yeah, I think by the time it gets to City Council, it becomes more than just conjecture. I mean, at our level, like us talking about something here today, that's one thing. But to be in a city council meeting speaking from a pulpit about something, it seems very official. And there's time in between times like this and before something goes to city council to engage other groups. And that's all I'm saying is that we'd like, you know, it'd be good to be engaged.
And if the council decided to form a new commission, and then you guys would be doing more than conjecture, be a recommendation. It should be looked at very closely. You know, that I always would hope that that the council that forms these commissions actually listens to them. You know, and you know that that's the frustrating part for people who don't understand how, you know, they're ignoring us. You know, you're an advisory group is what it is. And I was on the store commission for years, and you have to figure out, you have no real power other than a convincing power and making a good case for your recommendations. That's your guys' job is once you start formulating them from your subcommittees and groups come together and you start vetting your ideas, and then you come up with a list of recommendations. You know, you're going to want to sell those, justify all these recommendations, and then, you know, see, run it up the flagpole and see if anybody salutes, basically.
So one of the things I'll throw out there is, you know, while we're sitting here talking about this stuff, I mean, I think everybody here at the table knows that change happens. And as the leaders of Ashland Parks and Recreation, I know the policy side, administrative side, we know that we're on board with change. We just need to have the plan in place to make it happen. One of the things that we could be working on as an example is, and a place to collaborate right now that I think would be a lot of fun, and we have the opportunity, is on our maintenance practices and design right now, and how design affects future maintenance costs. Because we have the East Main Park that, frankly, if we can't figure out how to design it so it doesn't cost a lot of money to maintain, resources, all kinds of energy and fiscal resources, it's going to be really hard to justify building it. So that would be a really good opportunity to collaborate and really start talking about some of the realities and like talk about, well, you know, we can build this park and if we do it this way as a system, what happens over here affects over here and talk about that. And try to come up with something that we can actually show is something that we work together on, trying to reduce energy costs, because we have to reduce fiscal costs. I mean, not that we don't care about the energy waste, but we have to reduce fiscal costs. So it's in our best interest, and we are actually engaging with a consultant soon to actually get working on this. So it might be a fun opportunity to collaborate.
On that topic, can I ask a quick question? Mm-hmm. Do we have a policy or some sort of a guidelines about using artificial turf?
No, I don't think we have a policy on it. We don't have a policy against it, I'll tell you that. that we've heard everything about artificial turf, and we have been involved in a couple of projects where it's been installed, and we haven't used it in any large installations, but all these things are on the table. So.
Okay. So another question. So should we go back to public input for a moment?
John, do you have anything that isn't on the agenda?
Because we already said
this is on. This is
we're going to let you say
this is on the agenda.
I
was going to send Pete Young, our arborist, an email because I've been looking at the Ashen Creek Park Master Plan, and I see that it is designated, as I remember, it says oak savanna, but it's not really savanna oak. Oak woodland or oak whatever at the downstream side, and I've been putting some energy into talking to people about that and the possibility, and I'd love to talk to somebody on the staff, an arborist or somebody, about how that can happen, and because I'd love to see it happen, and I'd like to see, and I would be committed to getting community support even in terms of dollars to see that happen and to further the on-the-ground development of our master plan in that way down there.
It into more of an oak woodlands?
Pardon?
To develop it more into an oak woodlands
Actually, oak riparian habitat is some of the most needed habitat for birds and other critters. And so kind of this all goes. Anyhow, just wanted to let you know this is an idea I'm working on. I'm not working on it in secret, and so I just wanted to mention it today. And if anybody's got feedback for me or wants to meet me down there and walk on the site, actually I'm going to meet Shannon Rio, who's chair of the KBO.
So you're talking about the open space area?
The downstream.
So,
2 to 3 acres or something.
So I'd suggest you... You start with Jason. He manages the open space portion, and then you can Mike and Pete can get involved as well. But that'd be a good place to start.
Yeah, okay. And then goal setting. We're doing some planning and restoration in there now.
I've been down there cutting blackberries and digging roots.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
Yeah. So can we start to meet that? Oh, I'd love it. Thank you. Good.
All right, so we're still on this presentation on the CEAP. This is your chance to lobby or talk or explain.
I didn't realize I was presenting.
Well, I don't think you need to present.
I can certainly answer any questions if there are any. I can offer you my somewhat, I was going to say Monday. It's not Monday. It's Tuesday. Sure feels like Monday.
Yeah.
I can offer you some reflections on where we've been and where we might be headed and maybe some opportunities specifically for parks. But the climate plan on the whole for the last 2 years for me has been basically an unfunded mandate. And much like other climate policies in this country, we have a lot of expectations and not a lot of dedicated funds. I'm here, fortunately, for the time being, and so that's something of a resource, but it doesn't help get, new water heaters and new equipment on the ground, not directly anyhow. So I think it's a question for every department how much they want to dive in and tackle the SEEP. It's technically part of the council's approved plan for everybody to go along with, but operationally it's not in the comp plan. It's not in the master plans for the most part, which means it doesn't translate into annual work planning directly. And the only way to change that is to get it into the comp plan. The only thing is that
budget
the comp...
Budget time comes up and make sure you're ready.
And I would even say that budget time is not a good time to talk about it because everybody's freaking out about every other number. At that time.
Well, it's about justifying your existence, and that's what everybody we can talk to.
Just the guy
who has to justify our existence a lot, and so it's really that's what you guys are going to have to do, and it's like charging stations. Is there you guys discussing some way to implement more charging stations in town, that kind of stuff?
Yep.
I mean,
working
seems
on
like...
That. There's a lot going on. It's really hard to convey... all the different things that are happening because we have no communications department. I do the best I can with the people I contact. But hopefully when I put the next report out in March, April, that will help to catch everyone up a bit. So my, assuming I can get that done on time, which I'm expecting have to. So there is a lot going on, even though it's hard to know that from the outside, and I acknowledge that. With some of the policies and stuff that have been getting kicked around of late, it's taken 2 years to establish the new policy commission, which is unfortunate that it took that long, but it's the speed of process. They are very eager to do something and to push policy and to make up for the lost time. So I think that that's great from my perspective, because we need advocates and we need change, and we're way behind where we should be. However, we need to go with the speed of process, right? Just to speak to the two-cycle thing for a second, that hasn't actually even come back to the policy commission for that group to discuss. And as soon as it does, then surely we'll bring it to affected departments for comment. But so far, there's been a lot of very compartmentalized conversations, and even that commission didn't get through their whole agenda the last time. So there's going to be a speed of process that's going to dictate how things move, I think, which is hard for advocates and people who want change right now. But it's, not entirely a bad thing that government can't make snap decisions. In any event, I don't know if that really helps.
It absolutely has. Yeah, I think the comments around here is keep us in the loop. I'm going to proactively look at your minutes at this point.
Yes,
now
please.
That I know what you're about, and reread the plan again, and it had a lot of information on it. So mm-hmm. I get it all the first time, and maybe the second read, pick up some stuff, and then ask intelligent questions. That's sometimes an effort for me to ask something that's pertinent and make some sense of what you guys are doing. And we have a voting representative on our commission, right? You're on.
Yeah, we haven't established the.
Yeah, we have to formalize that.
Yeah, we're discussing that,
and
you do though, right?
Well, I don't really know if I do or if I don't.
Well, it's a personal thing.
What's that?
As a resident of Ashland, represent their city.
So officially, it's just an official thing, really. It's.
Here's my question, because I have kind of wondered about that. I don't know that APRC merits that large of a role on the Climate Policy Commission as to have one voting member by itself. If you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you think that all of the different parts of the city deserve sort of a voting member on it, or I assume that it wasn't set up that way because the intention wasn't, to have it be sort of the a survey of every part of the city. So, I'm happy to be a representative, or a formal representative of APRC there, if you think that that's important.
Well, the argument I would make for it is that APRC isn't like every other department in the city. We have our own policy board that makes decisions that can actually day-to-day decisions that don't need to go through the city council, and policy decisions on operations that don't need to go through the city council, where if public works or planning or cemeteries is going to make a major change, they would go through a process and eventually potentially go to the city council.
Forest Lands Commission, there's a voting member on that. We decided years ago that was an important commission to be part of, but I think at least have the discussion of whether we want to formalize it or not, and you're going to be on this commission whether we formalize it or not anyway, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and I guess
it's important to you. I'm also assuming that.
Yeah, I guess while you weren't appointed as a parks commissioner, you are a parks commissioner, and it's hard to separate roles in government. When you're sitting in a government building and you're an elected official, probably most everybody sees you as an elected official first, and then whatever other thing you're doing, paying your bill, your electric bill or whatever. But that's just the reality. You are an elected official, so you do represent us, whether you know it or not, or you like it or not, even wherever you are. So I would hope that just as a you know, although you weren't appointed as a, because you're a representative of Ashland Parks and Recreation, you are inside and you do represent us. And I just,
I don't object to it. I'm happy to, you know, to be sort of like the formal representative. I suppose if I were to leave, does that mean that there would have to be somebody else put into the formal representative position from the commission?
Well, as it is right now, it's not going to be a parks commissioner. It would just be the mayor chose you as a person, but you can't 100% detach yourself from us.
Yeah.
Because you are elected.
And like the art commission, we have a liaison, a non-voting member of that we send as a representative to bring back information. And if it's actually something that has to do with parks, then we as a commission vote on it. So we do have a liaison, but very few voting commission appointments. So that's why it's kind of limbo here. You can vote on APRC and you can vote on the Climate Commission as well. So, I don't know. At least it's worth a discussion at a meeting, whether it's a study session discussion, so everybody can chime in about how we feel about whether we want a permanent representative and you're it for now, or we just let this anomaly go and it might go away. I don't know. It seems like I would want to hear what the other commissioners say about this new commission.
So we are.
We want to be on board with it.
So the next meeting, which is Monday, week from yesterday, we are talking about the committees, and that'd be a great time to talk to the commissioners, and maybe, you know, the discussion ends up going, well, you're assigned as a member, a citizen, but you know, as a commissioner, if you could let us know what's going on, even though it's not your official role as a commissioner to be there,
okay.
Then it might be what it comes out to. Or the other thing that come out is that everyone agrees that they think that it should be an official. The mayor should acknowledge that it's a parks position, which probably isn't going to happen. The mayor probably doesn't see the need, honestly, to have a parks commissioner on there. Otherwise, he would have said, Julian as a parks commissioner, or Mike Gardner as the chair, wants you to assign somebody, and I'd like Julian to be the one you assign, which happens from time to time, you know. So,
our budget's like 10% of the city budget or thereabouts. So in that sense, we're you know, a pretty small part of the pie of the money. But as far as the effect, you know, we have a certain carbon storage going on, and that's kind of what we do. And we have a way of manipulating it, and we can enhance it or detract from it. And so I see we might have a bigger part of it than just budgetary issues. You know, like we're a small part of the city as a whole. I think we might have some problem-solving potential on our side that would be slightly more than just a small part of the budget, you know, as far as impacts-wise.
I would not like the citizen members of these commissions to feel limited by their other roles in the community, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there's a difference there, whether you go as a liaison and as a whatever, where you're strictly representing, speaking for. That doesn't cover the whole world of issues. And I think it's important for the citizen members of the committees to feel free to speak their minds. Hopefully it will be constructive and progressive.
Well, let's talk about it at the meeting on Monday. I think it'd be a great time to talk about it.
Stu, how does SEEP and like carbon neutrality credit the urban forest, or does it?
It doesn't at the moment. There are only recently methodologies for calculating that people have agreed upon. I'm looking at trying to develop that for Ashland maybe this year, bandwidth permitting. Not looking good right now. But basically, one of the questions is, you know, a lot of the largest chunk of the forest that we manage is outside of city limits, and currently our greenhouse gas reporting is constrained only to city limits. So there's a question, do we want to report on lands that we do not own that are outside of our boundary, and how does that affect us? I think if you're managing for carbon, there's an argument for doing that. But really, we're not I wouldn't say that we're managing for carbon. We're managing for resilience, which in a lot of cases means burning. Might improve long-term carbon storage, but short-term, there's definitely emissions. So I mostly just don't talk about our forest management because I don't have numbers to show one way or the other what the quantitative effect is, but there's now a methodology for that that we never had before. Mm-hmm. It's just a question of whether we want to put the resources into calculating that. I'm hoping we can. I've connected a little bit with GIS to see what kind of data, because we do need geospatial data for the forests. I presume we have better data for the parks than we do for AFR, but maybe I shouldn't presume that. So there's a way to get to that question, Mike, but we haven't tried to answer it in the past.
But I think we discussed at one point getting parks needs to get credit for the fact that we're in the carbon storage business as a sideline for recreation, mm-hmm. And we don't do much burning in the city limits. It's the interface that has the release,
sure.
Maybe. But we're our sideline is just because of the trees and the shrubs. Mm-hmm. By nature,
sure.
we are in a storage business as well. So,
yeah.
It's like just. Not that we need encouragement because mm-hmm. Everybody loves parks and trees and
yeah.
shrubs, but it is part of the solution in mm-hmm. the overall
and,
calculation.
Usually to validate claims of carbon storage, you have to have a protocol in place that will guard against that carbon going anywhere for 100 years or more, and that's within our power to do if we have the resources to throw at it, I suppose. And there's many people who ask me, why don't we have a local carbon offset program for planting trees? But, it's a complicated question. It's like, would that tree grow anyway? Is that tree drought tolerant? Is it going to add or subtract from our fire risk? Who's managing that tree for 100 years?
Yeah.
There's just a lot of questions. It seems very simple.
And planning does require 45% pervious surface on residential property, mm-hmm. and that you have street tree. You have to, part of your project has to plant street trees, and
mm-hmm.
so we have a list. So the tree commission might be a good part to vet some of these ones that are maybe the choices people are making, because
mm-hmm.
you have a whole menu of trees that you can plant out
right.
the front of your house that you're required to do it. And, mm-hmm. The longer-lived plants maybe are the ones that, I don't know, it seems like there's a lot of resource in town for that kind of information. We got a couple arborists in,
sure.
in our, I guess, we want to be part of the solution, I think. I don't know, maybe there's a little conflict of how quickly we do it or how we do it, but, that's you deal with that every day, probably,
Yeah.
It's like there's people want to do it yesterday and people that are not that concerned
mm-hmm.
at all, and I think raising the awareness is part of what
sure.
you guys need to do, and so that's really, you got a multi-factioned things going on there,
and so I guess
we're in the loop, we can be sound off about how we feel about these things.
Well, definitely reach out to me if you have specific questions, because it's hard for me. I know that the information doesn't diffuse to all quarters, and so the best thing to do is just email me or give me a call.
So I'll just take the opportunity to let you know that we're in the process of selecting our consultant for the pool right now.
Mm-hmm.
So as we move forward, and this is for the pool design,
uh-huh.
to create all of the bid documents, all the equipment, everything, we'll let you know and bring
sure.
you in and talk about some alternatives.
That sounds great. I don't know if you want to write it into the scope in the bid or not, but I know that Public Works has started to alter some of their, contract documents to include climate goals and stuff as part of the scope, just so it doesn't get dropped out on accident later.
Yeah, that'd be great. We'll talk to you about it.
As to what the best way to do that is, it probably depends on you guys and what you feel comfortable putting in there, because it's not in the comp plan yet,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's the great thing that...
But we did go to the city council and tell them that our goal is to reduce our impact as much as possible, and kind of we're focusing on natural gas.
Yeah.
And that's a big way that we can address, that's a big thing that we can address, because it is a big thing with swimming pools.
Yes.
So that's part of our
sure.
goal there.
And I didn't have this data until just pretty recently, actually, but the pool was the single largest natural gas user in the city municipal inventory. And, you know, since 2016, anyway.
Tell us what number two is, so we can...
What's that?
Slide in under. No, just kidding. We're gonna yeah. do everything that we can to... We wrote that into the scope, actually.
Yeah, cool.
Of the RFQ that we did. And we're in the process of informing our responders and negotiating with them on a price. So we're not quite to plans yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting there.
So any more questions about the plan, climate plan? We'll move on to the second would be the fuel consumption analysis.
Yeah, so Mike actually got all this information together and we sat down and talked about it this morning. Unfortunately, it was really hard to get this information to begin with. And when they gave it to us, they gave it to us as a big blob of information. And we just haven't had the resources or time being one of those to actually sit down and make something meaningful out of it. So we know how much money we spend on fuel costs. And we're talking about gas and diesel for vehicles and equipment. We know how much we spend total, but if for it to be useful for a discussion here, I think we need to break it down and show where that usage is going, because we've got a lot of different categories, and we're going to work on establishing some different categories. But we've got the small equipment that we were just talking about. We've got the, you could call it medium-sized equipment, like the carts and smaller mowers. Medium-sized mowers, and we've got large equipment, we've got diesel users, we've got our vehicles, and so we'll be breaking that down and we will get all that information back to you, but in a form that we can actually start looking at productively. I don't think we're at a point where it would have been productive to look at it right now.
Yeah, and I think it'd be helpful for you guys where you can target maybe mm-hmm. where the most gains with the least amount of pain are involved.
I can tell you right now, our fuel consumption has gone down at the golf course. You know, so that's one thing. But so when we bring it back, we'll be able to show how things have moved and why they've moved. We'll be able to target a couple of key areas and make some goals. So, and I think it'll tell stories too. I mean, If we look at our average fuel consumption for vehicles, and it tells a story that we drive more than we should, we might want to look at how we're organized and how we where we put our bases of operations.
Time and motion type.
Exactly. Thing. Yeah. So yeah. So there's a lot that can come out of this. And, we are still looking into it. It just took until when to get the numbers.
Last Wednesday.
Because there's hybrids and then there's all electric, you know. There's a considerable difference between those two. So I know we're kind of moving in a hybrid, and that seems like the first bridge to get across to the all-electric ones that just drive people around from point A to point B in the parks, you know. That's a whole budgetary thing. It's going to take a while to cycle in. But we really want to discuss all that and see... You know, which vehicles we want to upgrade to all plug-in, you know. So,
right.
So,
and then we also have, every time we purchase a vehicle, we look at what the alternatives are. And we happen to be purchasing a vehicle that requires we have a requirement for a dump bed on a full-size truck, that we're getting for the golf course. So we look at that and we say, well, what are all our alternatives for electric or hybrid or whatever? There aren't any. Not that I know of. I mean, we're talking, we need a 1-ton truck now. We've gone from 3/4 ton to 1 ton to be able to just operate the dump bed. So there's that. And then the other thing is we can, as we're looking at our fuel consumption, the other story it might tell is, well, there's all kinds of things it could tell, you know. We can get a lot out of that information, but looking at it as a bulk expenditure says almost nothing. You know, all that says is to do everything that we do right now is costing us this much. Mm-hmm. We don't know that hiding in there is this, is the fact that we're spending way too much gas on this, for fuel on this area, you know, and everything else is just normal, but you got this one area, or maybe everything's normal, and we can work on reducing it by percentages or something. But anyway, so that's where we are with that.
So you, and I'm sorry, you said gas and diesel. Did you also do an inventory for natural gas use, or was that just
the we don't have any vehicles powered off of natural gas right now, and that's a separate thing that we can look at. We can get that information easily.
Because like a place like this is heated with, I'm guessing, with natural gas. I don't actually know.
Yeah, I believe this is a,
that's a heat pump over there, I believe. That building.
Yeah, these are heat pumps. There's another one. Right,
okay, so these are heat pumps.
So these are all electric.
The Grove, though, what is that?
A lot of the facilities have multiple fuel sources.
Yeah,
they could be propane. They could.
I think Grove has multiple for sure.
Okay, so we do use natural gas, and we know that with the coal, for instance, we use a lot of natural gas. Actually, for this study, we're just looking at vehicles and equipment, but that's something that we can pull out of the budget, actually, our actual expenses from the last fiscal year pretty easily.
Because it seems like we would, and I don't know this, but do we submit, or like for the bill that we, or the, whatever, the invoice that we get from Avista, does it get separated out by APRC versus all the rest?
It does by the buildings, yeah. We actually know by building. I don't know how many accounts we have, but I know we pay a certain amount for the Grove, we pay a certain amount for the, when we were doing Community Center and Pioneer Hall. I believe we get a bill for this area if we have anything up here, electric or whatever. So I believe they're all on different accounts, but I have to check into that.
I've got all the natural gas data for the city, but I'm still working on pairing it up with the common facility name because they're all by like service number or something. So I could tell you roughly, but you know, in a lot of cases, there's not much we can do with the current facility unless it's part of a facilities maintenance plan, which we may or may not have. But for new facilities, I think there's more opportunity because we haven't made that decision yet.
But you're proposing that we might want to have natural gases. There's the fuel use, gasoline and diesel, and then we spin the meter on whatever. So we can evaluate the buildings that use it or what the actual purpose is for and how easy it would be at some point at time replacement, then we can maybe consider getting off the natural gas at certain specific points, at least evaluate it before that time comes up. I mean, water heaters, you know, there's the all-electric resistant heat water heaters, and then there's the new heat pump ones, and I don't know what the city, you know, would, if that's going to save us, be more efficient to heat water that way, then they're a little more expensive, but then, you know, we're gonna have to evaluate all these new products coming online as they come online, not when we're the last ones to get them, but as they show up, we want to look at them pretty closely.
So,
and then when we replace, so water heaters are, you know, always being replaced, and there was even rebates on heat pump water heaters, I believe. They're probably three times more expensive. But
as we replace things, we look at always, like I said, the alternatives. We can get the information on natural gas usage. It's just informative until we do have a capital project like the pool, where we can actually make some changes. We have a capital expense that we can actually make changes with. Places like the Grove or the Community Center or Pioneer Hall, Pioneer Hall and Community Center are going to be going through some major renovations potentially. And that's another reason why the City Council should consider putting more money into those buildings than what it takes just to fix the structural issues. You know, so anyways, but our focus right now really is to keep focus on one thing at least, to see if we can actually create a plan or at least get enough information where we can evaluate creating a plan. We're focusing on the fuel consumption for vehicles and equipment right now. And we'll bring that information back to you guys in a form, hopefully, that we can actually have a good discussion about, and it might be eye-opening for you. It could be eye-opening good, but you never know.
So it's shockingly exciting.
Yeah, exciting.
Is it possible, do we ever buy used vehicles?
No, we generally don't buy used vehicles unless it's some kind of really specialized vehicle. Ashland Parks and Recreation, on the other hand, let me just separate the city from Ashland Parks and Rec. We buy used vehicles from the city who bought them new.
Okay.
So a lot of, there are cases where we do have equipment that is handed down from the city. But the way the fleet system is set up right now is they do buy new because there's a incentive for buying new. The city, with the way the state does procurement, they have a certain vendor who is on the state bid list, and they have bid to be the main provider of vehicles, and then they provide to all government agencies at a discounted rate. So we get, for instance, a truck that could MSRP could be like $70,000. We might pay $42,000 or $45,000 for that. So there is that incentive, and then when we sell them again, this is all a fleet thing. But then once we get money out of them when we sell them again as well. So I don't.
Also maintenance.
Yeah, and then there's the maintenance thing. And one of the things that we've ran into with, and this isn't a commentary on our fleet at all, but one of the things we've run into with fleet is that they will switch gears and stop maintaining things, which makes it hard to keep old equipment around. For instance, the golf carts, all the old golf carts, not that we wanted to keep them around. For fuel, I mean, they're bad for fuel consumption and stuff, but it's cheaper to keep them on standby if you only need to use something a couple times a year, you know, than renting them. But one of the things we heard from them is that, fleet is that, well, we sent all the parts back to maintain those. We don't maintain those anymore. So they kind of switch gears. At some point, they draw a line and they say, we don't maintain those anymore. It starts costing a lot to maintain them. Our dump truck is the same way. We bought it used from them, and they say, well, you need to get rid of that soon because we're not going to maintain it anymore after a certain point, things like that. Yeah. And then I guess there's also the question to be asked, is it, you know, is keeping an old vehicle better if the new vehicles have better emission standards and things like that too? So.
Yeah, as I understand it, it's better to buy a new vehicle than to just keep driving whatever gas-guzzling vehicle you might have had in the past.
Yeah.
Okay. But the decision about what to actually buy, like, you know, we will be buying Ford, I don't know, something or other, is made at the state level.
No, it's actually, the state sets it up so that if we want Ford, Chevy, electric, whatever we want, there's a bidder who has given the best price possible on that. And they've been consecrated as the one who's going to provide that, and they will provide it at a certain rate. It's the state bid. So the decision on what we buy generally is a decision that's made through us saying what we need and fleet saying what they can, what they have the ability to maintain.
So you get to select from a menu, basically.
Basically, yeah. It's generally Chevrolets.
But it used to be Fords.
Yeah.
It switches, you know, you'll see it like every 10 or 15 year cycles.
And then most of our full size trucks that you see are V6s, you know, and stuff like that. So, you know, that they make these decisions and we tell them what we need. They tell us what the options are. And we don't go down to a dealership and say we want this one or that one or anything like that.
Sure. Yeah.
Builder friends of mine are still waiting for a electric pickup truck.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a couple of them proposed, but they're really not available yet. There's Brad Rupp in town. He builds them, but, you know, he takes the gas engines out and replaces it with electric motors and lithium-ion batteries. But then that's a one-off thing. But until several builder friends that are waiting patiently for an electric truck, you know, and most of your travel is right in town, and so it's not a big commuting thing happening with the trucks, and so you can get to Medford and back, and you can drive around town and plug them in job sites and stuff, so it's all kind of waiting for technology to drift down our way before we can evaluate it and move in that direction. But you know, you made that point about design and maintenance, and you know, that's something I know Rick Lant's very interested in. And then we had the lawn wars at Scenic. I don't think I'll ever forget the lawn war. And I learned a lot about how much lawn do we need, because every square foot of lawn has a maintenance level and things. And then also to efficiently mow it, you know, I never even thought of that. Like, hey, if you make a little isthmus out here and the guy's got to get the hand mower out, that's not very efficient. If the guy can efficiently mow our lawn that we need for the community, because we're telling people to kill their lawns, so we are the lawns of the community now, and so you know, it seems like that's a pretty simplistic thing, and you guys have already well ahead of that. But I'm sure there's, you know, we go to you guys for all the ideas of you know, the cutting edge. We were talking about last year about that group that came to town about taking care of turf and with this new process, and you know, yeah, I know that sounded pretty interesting. And you know, you gotta go home and think about that and evaluate and go, how's that work with us? If it does, and come back to us and explain, because you guys are the experts. And so,
by the way, we committed to that, but we haven't seen anything from them yet.
So yeah, well, it's nice you threw the
today
the balls in their court to a tennis term.
Sounds like they may have. They sent it back over.
They sent me this packet today.
Oh, okay.
And it's a whole bunch of questions that we have to fill out on cultural practices. Okay. They want to know what we did, how we did. Yeah.
Does it seem onerous and all, or is it?
It does.
Yeah.
I mean,
it
seems like
staff.
A lot of work, yeah. Which I'm going to start tackling. Yeah.
I mean, they've asked you to do a lot of work just to fill out the packet.
This is the pre-work that needs to be done so that they can know. So they want to know how many pounds of nitrogen you've been putting on your turf for the last 10 years. How often have you been aerating it? You know, what type of seed do you have? What did your current soil profile say about the soil? What is your primary use for the site? You know, what are your primary goals for the turf at that site? So it's going to be very different for a golf course as opposed to like the lawn in Lithia or Hunter or East Main. So they just want to know, they want a starting place to write a prescriptive plan for the areas that they're going to be trying to coach us on how to maintain differently.
And they're talking specifically about turf, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and East Main, I see East Main being completely different, where we're not doing any of the besides a playground and a drinking fountain and somewhere to use the restroom, that park isn't going to be that typical, you know, where we don't need, maybe we don't need typical turf that needs mowed once a week, things like that. So
can we just change the name to the climate change ready, zero maintenance, pollinator friendly community playground?
Yeah.
Well, we'll do it in acronym. And it'll,
yeah.
I mean, East Main's very, you know, tired. It's very 2019.
Yeah, it is. You're right, it is. Well, we've got opportunities there, and we've got a staff that is like not seeing how we're going to bring on more maintenance without doing something different. So we're primed and ready to do something different.
Yeah.
You know? Zero East Maintenance Park.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. So anyways, that RFP is going out really soon here, and then we'll be starting the design process, which I imagine will take most of the year. So
you ever heard of Volunteer Park?
Volunteer Park.
It's a big park up in Washington.
Run by volunteers, that's what it is. Okay. I was going to bring one other topic up for the group to think about for a minute. I think, so maybe, Stu, you mentioned that somebody mentioned that there's a list of trees that the city or the contractors, builders can select from to plant in their front.
Tree Commission has a whole list of appropriate street trees, it's called. Yeah.
Okay. Is it, what does everybody think about the idea of developing a list of pollinator shrubs that could be used in new plantings? For example, we have already talked about the idea of having pollinator habitat at the golf course, which sounds like it's at the beginning stages of going forward, but also potentially a list of plants that would be good for Zero East Maine, the concept being that they would be least maintenance because they're shrubs and, you know, not things that would have to be hand-troweled.
Yeah.
There is a list already. The city has a list of native pollinator plants and recommended shrubs. And I believe Julie Smitherman kind of houses that list. I'll talk to her about it. See
so the thing where my mind goes is, you know, we have, we don't really want to silo ourselves, but we do have different tasks that are taken on by different groups. And we have a pollinator committee, the Bee City subcommittee. And I think that a good route for these questions to go is start here, maybe find out what Julie has, see if something can be made of that, and if there's refinement to be made, talk about how to involve the Bee City subcommittee in that, to have them make a recommendation potentially to this group or to the parks commissioners for an adopted list. The chances are, do you know if our Bee City had anything to do with creating this pollinator mm-hmm. list?
Yeah, I think they did.
Well, if they did, then we might, let's start there, see where we go from there. And and then see what you think about it. I know Rick Lawn has some concerns about some of the typical pollinator plants that tend to get used. And we can see if it needs another revision.
I know that SOLA, so Southern Oregon Landscape Architects Association, is a group in the Valley, and Julie, I believe, is the president of the group. And I think that they were influential, too, in coming up with that.
So Julian and Jim, if you want to see it, too, what we can do, Mike, if you could get that from Julie Smitherman, just to cut down on the amount of running around people have to do, and send that out to everybody, and then you can respond back to Mike on that, and we can get the ball rolling. We'll send it to everybody.
And at what point do we direct the potential designers of the park to look at these aspects we're talking about as far as the maintenance issues and the pollinating issues? And you know, xeriscape is a big word, and there's a whole conservation group that kind of, if you want to have a low water use set of shrubberies that you're required to plant at time of development, they'll give you a list of those too. So low water use, the xeriscape's been thrown out there so much, I'm not really even sure what that actually means, but it's about having lower water needing shrubberies that you, once they're established, you can cut back on the water quite a bit. And so there's right. the guy, the master of that right here. And
for example, down the North Fountain behind the Nature Center, a lot of that was put in to establish, and we put little ball valves on them, little drip
clothes. Gotcha. Which ones were the lowest water?
As we went through, it's like, yes, it's like, okay, that one's done. It's on its way. Yeah. It's totally
so it's an instructional, educational tool as well, is to if somebody's deciding to plant a shrubbery in their yard, then you know everybody wants to save on water. It's just a very short menu is some of the problem. It's not a very interesting list of plants when you have a whole palette of plants you could plant, and once you decide to do the low use ones, you're stuck with not stuck, but you know, you don't have,
and then involve the deer population too. It's even narrower.
They're doing the shrubbery trimming for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
So to answer your question, it'll be one of the overarching goals of the designers to create to come up with alternatives, which we will work with them on for reducing landscape maintenance. Now,
and they'll know this as they have their proposal. They'll maybe have part of the resume will say, hey, look what we've done here.
Yeah.
And they already have a track record for it, as opposed to just blazing a trail
that
they're not familiar with.
So what the way we're set up now, we have the I'll have to think a little bit more about this, about how it sounds like – you know, we have the opportunity to get a group of people involved, but, you know, we already have this group, and then we have the planning group, you know, to look at going forward, which I think both groups need to look at this. And I'm wondering if, I need to think about this a little bit more, but when I want to, because we're going into this project, may want to put together a committee, because we are looking at these different alternatives. And if the city, if Stu specifically, if this was something that you think is up your alley or your bailiwick, mm-hmm. where you wouldn't mind being involved with us in trying to look at alternatives to reduce energy and mm-hmm. and cost, water use, everything out at this park. We could have Stu. We could have one person from this committee, one person from the other committee, one person from the Nature Center who staffs the city subcommittee. Obviously, Mike and myself. You know, maybe Jason's involved as well for the infrastructure part. You know, there's lots of opportunities here, so we might be putting together another little group. Not that we need another subcommittee, but I think an ad hoc group. Yeah. Once it's done, it's gone.
Yeah.
But we've done that before.
Well, I think it's kind of exciting that we're creating a new park, and, you know, and technically, we don't have to, or we get paid to maintain the YMCA park now, as opposed to, you know, so.
Yeah.
You know, the balancing act, obviously it's not an equal balance, but if you're reducing your maintenance over here, the hope is we have to have a park there. I don't think you can get an argument for not having the park. We got the property. We're going to have to develop it. Let's be wise about the development. It's kind of a project that seems kind of exciting. I don't know if I was in the business of designing and having to maintain parks, you know, it'd be kind of a fun project.
It is exciting, and I think the process will be exciting too, because we've already had one very successful meeting with the community. We're going to hold another one, and then after the next one, we'll be turning it over to the consultant, and they'll take it from there. But we obviously will be holding the reins on that. But you know, we have potential to develop 6.5 acres, and we have a concept right now that we're handing off to them that looks like we can do something different, you know. I'll be thinking about that and how to get everybody involved in that. But as you can imagine, it's hard to keep running back and forth from committees and making sure everybody's involved. It's sometimes easier to form an ad hoc committee and have all the recommendations come out of that committee and have all the other committees keep track of what's going on there, as opposed to taking it to several different committees. So.
I'd be happy to be a part of it.
Okay. Well, we will. I'll be thinking about that. And the first thing, if we're going to do that, the first thing to do would be selecting a consultant, which we go through a process of reviewing the RFPs, which I'm sure you guys have done.
And the consultant / designer.
Designer. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. The consultant is the designer. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I will. I'll let you know how that's progressing and how to deal with that. I will bring that up on Monday as a committee, an ad hoc committee that we need to form. So, okay.
And we're going to discuss the climate commission.
We're going to discuss all the committees, on Monday, and the climate will be one of them, and how, see what the commissioners want to do with that. But even if, and the one thing I'll say in the meeting, I'll just say now, it's really, who sits on these committees is up to the mayor, you know. It's his decision on how they're structured, and we'll just have to keep that in mind as we're talking about that. So,
well, hey, I think it's getting near 3:12. Anybody have anything else to add?
Mike, did you get to your third bullet point there?
Yeah. Okay. Yep, that was just this information I got today.
Jason, you might want to update them on the burning, since we talked about burning in the city.
So I got permits
we got the permits for burning up here.
Yeah,
on the hillside and over at Westwood in the city limits. And we're, you know, again, we're just waiting until March when the burn window is in the city limits. And the burn window for the city limits is from March until burn season, until they tell us no more burning. So we will be, every day we get that's a burn day, we'll be up here trying to get this done.
And on Stu's point, since that's kind of a release of carbon, and I know the carbon gets released slowly as it breaks down, and it's not rapid oxidation, but, you know, we probably chip everything we could possibly chip. And
we did. We actually
use everything we chip.
We actually had part of this when we set this up was anything within reason from about 50 to 60 feet from the road. Down, we had them dragged down, and then my crew, we came in and chipped it all the way down, and as much down into the park as we could, you know, where we can get a chipper and stuff and equipment to do it. So we did chip as much as we could, and we used those chips on the trails and everywhere.
And is there a lot of, obviously you got to watch the weather as far as the burn. The pollution part of it.
Right.
I've been noticing that it's been pretty high. When you guys were doing the burning up here, the parts per million was consistently up into the, still in the good range, but closer to 50 than.
Right. So what I have to do is anytime I burn in the city or Siskiyou Mountain Park outside of the city limits or part of Bassett Castle, is I have to call the State Forest Service up in Salem, tell them approximately how much we think we're going to burn, give them a tonnage. Give them that and tell them where, and then they'll look at the forecast, call me back usually an hour later or the next day and say, yes, it's burn day. No, it's not. And then we can, if it's in the county, outside of the city limits, even if it's not a county burn day, if the county says, no, it's not a burn day, Salem overrides them. And if they say it is, we can burn.
Gotcha.
But in the city, it has to be a county burn day. So even if Salem says yes, but the county says no, then we can't. So we're a little more strict in the city as far as, so we have, you know, two different entities we're following inside the city limits. And getting permits from the fire department, which anytime it's burn day, they'll give it to us. As long as it's, you know, not trying to burn in like the middle of August or something.
No. We have plays going on.
Yeah.
So anything else around the horn here? So I'm going to adjourn our meeting at